everybody. Welcome back to the Visionary Practice Solutions podcast. I am joined today by Dr. Ashanthi Gajavira. Did I say that right? Did I get close?
Perfect.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Perfect. I knew I was going to struggle with it. She is the owner and CEO of Healthspan Neurology. She's up in New York, and she runs a direct care practice, but she's had a really interesting career. She's been in this for a while now. So I'm really excited to get to talk with her today about her journey, what that's been like, because I think she's got some really valuable lessons that we could all benefit from at this point. So welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. It's really fun to talk to docs who are stretching their boundaries a little bit.
Yes, yeah. doing the different things. So yeah. Let's talk about it. So you came out of your fellowship in 2003. What did you go into immediately? Let's talk through that.
Yeah, so I went through training and I just knew I wanted to be a clinician 100%. I loved neurology. I loved patients. I wanted to be that doc who knew the family, you mm-hmm. know, and so I knew private practice was for me because that's what I could schedule my time and how I did things.
Yep.
And I was super lucky and met like the world's best partners ever. And they hired me and they were, you know, I was a little baby, right? I was like 34 at the time and they were in their 50s. And seasoned docs, and it was a dream. And I worked with the best people. They remain some of my best friends. And we had a golden practice, and I was really, really, really lucky. So I was in private practice. So I became a partner, and then by 2010, I became the managing partner of that practice.
Yeah.
And so I was starting to do the, you know, supervise, not do, but supervise the billing, work with the accountant, took on the hiring, took on the,
we moved into a new office. Yeah.
Like moved into a new building, worked with the architect. I mean, it was a lot,
yes.
But it was really creating a business actually. Yeah. And, I did all that and I loved it. And I was lucky to work with these two people, who were really just loved neurology. We loved each other and we loved our patients. And neurologists are a funny breed. I'm just going to be honest, but I'm going to say we were like the three coolest neurologists.
There you go. Yes.
And we got really lucky and we hired two more cool neurologists and we had a golden practice. It was really lovely. Mm. Over time, starting around 2010, right when I became managing partner, which is probably why they're like, your turn, you're in.
Yeah, right, here you go, yeah.
Looking at the numbers, it was like, how is this working? Like this model that we are able to spend 45 minutes with patients, this is not sustainable anymore. You know, all the meaningful use criterion came, all the checkboxes came.
Yes. Yep.
Prior to that, my notes were transcribed on a little recorder, right?
I love it.
I would mail my patient, all my referring doctors, printed letters on beautiful letterhead.
Oh.
Like, think about that. Just think about how crazy that is.
Yeah.
And then, you know, 2010, we're like, okay, got to keep up the times. And we're going to... now everything's electronic. So we got an EMR, we have changed everything, but I realized this isn't working. And then the compensations went down, the cuts, there were Medicare cuts. And then, at some point in there, I decided I'm not doing the meaningful use. I'm just not doing it.
Yeah.
So
I didn't either.
I'm just going to take that cut. And then it was with, you know, gradual death by a thousand cuts, not for the practice, but for my joy in medicine.
Yeah.
As the managing partner, I was seeing the insurance cuts. I was seeing how much time we were spending on.
Increasingly, the use of the word provider, mm-hmm. increasingly the frustration from patients that even though I was spending as much time as I could, usually like 45 minutes per patient, I really tried to stick with. Patients were frustrated. The internet was overwhelming them with information. Nobody comes to see a neurologist feeling well. That's just
Right.
Never the case.
Yeah, you're not getting the healthy people here.
Yeah, no, and and I mean that's the case in medicine in general, but many things we can fix, and in neurology, there's so much we can't fix. So, education and empowerment is what we do, frankly. Unless you have time, you really can't do that. So you're often feeling like you're shortchanging patients and yourself. And then, in 20 and then COVID came, and that was a complete nightmare. And there was just a gradual devaluation of the physician. And I had seen what it could be. And I knew it was possible. Like, I knew how joyful, rewarding, emotionally and intellectually gratifying a career in medicine could be. I had that 7-year stint from 2003 to 2000, where it really was a beautiful thing. And I knew what it could be, and I realized I didn't have that. And I was increasingly short with my patients. And so that was 2022, 2023. Around that same time, I'd always loved preventive medicine and integrative medicine, and licensed in medical acupuncture along the way, and did mindfulness-based medicine. And so I knew that I needed, I could be, I don't mean more, but I could be more, you know? So, with my husband's license to have like zero income, because he's a sugar daddy math teacher, and I mean that in the best way, honestly. He is a sugar daddy math teacher because we live like math teachers and we live by spreadsheets. So it's a great way to live. And I just decided to leave and gave my partners sort of a notice, and then left my practice. I did, so from a practical standpoint, set up like the legal entity so that I had something leaping into.
That was smart, yeah.
And I called it HealthSpan Neurology because I knew I wanted it to be a preventive practice, but I didn't know how to do any of that. Like, I had a vision, but I didn't really, I had a very fuzzy vision of what that was going to be.
Did you feel like when you were having those conversations with your husband that this was kind of flirting a bit with the burnout situation, or did you feel like you'd gotten there yet? It's such a hard,
Oh, I was
ambiguous
there.
thing. Yeah, that's
No,
why I'm
I
asking,
mean,
right? Because we don't
yeah,
talk
no,
about
I was
this.
there. I think that like I was angry all the time. I was very lucky to have somebody who knew me so well and whose opinion I trusted so much. He said, "Listen, I don't care. You need to find a therapist. And you need to talk to somebody about this." And I'd never been to therapy before, not because I don't believe in it. I actually made my kids go to therapy from the time they were 7. Not because it was sort of like, I want you to know that therapy is okay. Like, therapy is a way of life. Like, you should, everybody. So it wasn't that I was against therapy.
Not
I
done
don't,
it.
not done it. And so I can talk more about seeing the therapist, but I can definitely, there's other things to talk about as well.
Absolutely. No, and it just, I wanted to kind of like highlight that up because I think, especially for female physicians in particular, we are very much raised to you just shut it off when you go into the exam room, and whatever's happening on the inside, you put forward this particular persona. And it's like when it starts feeling foreign to you, what you're feeling on the inside versus what you're able to portray. Because when you've been doing it, as you know, for like, 5, 10, 15 years, like you can flip that switch like it's nobody's business. You walk into
You
the
walk
room
in
and
the
you're
room
like,
and
it's
you're
totally different tone, and you're just so excited to be there. And then you walk out and you're like, I freaking hate my life. So, I wanted to kind of highlight that part about your story and that you notice that change, right? Because I think there's a lot of us that have come out into medicine. We kind of had an idea of what medicine was supposed to be. We didn't necessarily get to experience it like you did for a period of time. But we had this idea from the people that we shadowed and the people that encouraged us to go into medicine because we saw how they were living and we thought, this is going to be great. I'm going to follow this prescription. And then we got out and it's like, but it's not that. And there's this weird alienation, I think, that can happen for some of us where it's like, is this me? Am I not sucking it up enough that I should be, you know, that I should be?
Yeah. And so I've been recently interviewing some med students to work with me for the summer. And I love talking to them because, you know, they're so bushy-eyed and or bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yes.
And, you know, why do you want to be a physician? I love just the feeling when I talk to people and I hear their stories and I feel like I'm making a difference and I'm making an impact. And see, even in our worst times, we're still doing those things.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So you could argue, well, what's the big deal? You're still helping
Absolutely.
People. Just help them in a lesser capacity.
Yep. Or you should be grateful you're doing it. Yes.
You should be grateful that you're doing this. You should be grateful that you're in this position. I mean, do you know how much, you know, people would want to be in your position?
Absolutely.
But I think the reason I was able to take that leap is because I knew how it had been.
Yeah.
And so that memory of that, my body, my mind knew how exponentially better it had been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's so important. So for those of us that might have come out right as things were changing and don't really have a memory of this, just know there are docs that do remember that this could be better. So like, it's not just you. there is hope.
You know, a lot of people, when they hear that, they say, oh, it was better because you got paid better. No,
no,
this isn't the pay. It is the injustice, the sort of moral incongruence.
Yes. The
with
devaluation.
What you are meant to be doing.
Yeah.
Right. It's you're just misaligned. It's like you spent 20 years of your life. And when people use the word burnout, I mean, I get it, but it just makes me think that it's because you're working so hard. We are so good at hard work, right?
Yes.
Hard work is not the problem.
No.
We can do super hard things. And I think the fact that you can't do super hard things is why you should take that leap. I always think like, you know, we didn't go to residency and train for 14 years because we're slow learners.
Right. Right.
We did it because there's so much vastness to learn and because of the complexity of what we know and the rich experience that comes with that. And I can't think of many professions that are willing to sacrifice so much. So
no, I
don't
agree.
Let anyone tell you you're just burned out because you can't take it.
Right, because you can't do it. So then how did the move into direct care look for you? Like, what was that? What was that journey like?
I knew when I left that I needed to go in direct care. I knew there wasn't an insurance path for me because I was leaving a system and the system was the problem.
Yes.
I wasn't the problem.
Yes.
My partners were not the problem. My staff was not the problem. The problem for me was the system within which I had to work.
Function, yeah.
And so I opted out of Medicare and I dropped all insurances. So the, you know, I did that before I even knew what I was going to be doing exactly. And I knew that I wanted to do preventive medicine because, you know, when you've seen thousands of patients with neurodegenerative diseases and you know that half, if not more, of these cases could be preventable, but we're not doing anything to prevent them.
Yeah.
That became, just the more I sat with that, that became what I had to be doing. And it was what I was doing for myself and my own family history. Mm-hmm. And I knew that to do that is required. I don't want to say, I think it required maturity in medicine because everything to do with dementia prevention is cardiac health, metabolic health, inflammatory health, gut health, hormonal health. And as a neurologist, you don't do any of those things unless you've been doing it for 20 years.
Right. Right.
Right. And so I've been doing it for 25 years. So I think that once you decide that you're going to follow your own path instead of the laid out yellow brick road that's there to just agree with and keep you on within the system, you can then really navigate the path that you want to take. And so once you start to do that, then your creativity, your emotional and intellectual intelligence comes into play. And honestly, the world just opens up.
I love that.
Because you've been kept in your silo. You now are unleashed and you can do whatever you want at this point. And I think part of that is wonderful, but part of that is scary because there's nobody telling you what to do.
Right. There's almost too many options. Like right. That's, yes, yes. Yeah. That is the biggest thing with, I think, most clients is it's like when we start delving into some of the cash pay services or going direct
right.
here, it's like,
right.
Wait a minute, I really can make this anything I want. Now there's almost too many options.
There's
like
too many options. Yeah. And I think for me, a really important part of that was knowing what was morally appropriate for me, intellectually, the most fascinating, creatively, the most stimulating.
Yes.
So keeping true to my compass has been incredibly important. So for me, for example, in the cognitive longevity space, there's so much, I'm going to call it bunk.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's just stuff that could certainly make me a lot of money and be great for marketing.
Sure.
But it's not what I want to do. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying for me, it's just, it's not going to make me rediscover my joy in medicine, which
Sure.
is really what I want to be doing. And so I've decided how I wanted to stay in my lane. Although my lane is very broad, it's guided by my moral compass. And I always think, you know, once you get off the brick road, you can create your own garden. You can take roads and associate with people and associate with moral sort of gray lines.
Gray areas, yeah.
Yeah. I think the scary thing about going off the brick road is making sure you build your garden. You don't just go into the weeds where you're now lost again.
Yeah. What do you feel like are the big things that helped you kind of build that garden? What kind of borders did you put up for yourself? I guess maybe is a good way to think about that.
I think writing a mission statement was helpful.
Ooh, I
for
love
me.
Those.
At the beginning, it doesn't have to be, my mission is to prevent dementia, right?
Right.
But it can be, my mission is to build a practice that aligns with my joy in medicine, intellectual pursuits, creativity, and not necessarily for me, it wasn't necessarily making money. It was to make a sustainable practice, but the financial part of it, while incredibly important, I don't want to mitigate how important it is in knowing your value and building the sustainability of your practice. But
yes,
that wasn't the driving force for me.
For
now,
you,
it
yes.
could be, it could be, but just for me. The other huge part is finding your people. Because you're now off the brick road and you think that your people who loved you before, like people have said to me so many times when I was leaving, what are we going to do? You're our rock star neurologist. We refer everyone to you. And I would say, well, you can still refer
can
to
still
me.
Do it. Yeah.
But here's the thing. They don't.
No.
They don't. Like I mean, I might sound conceited to say it, but I think I was like one of the favorite neurologists in a metropolis of a million people, right? So like it's, when I say Rochester is a metropolis, that's
right,
kind of
right,
fun.
Right, yeah.
But you get what I mean. But it's a big, it's, you
it
know,
is a
it's
big city.
And it's a huge medical center. And I still feel like even in private practice, I was well known. But once you go direct pay, insurance systems, hospital-based doctors, they don't click on your name because that's basically what they're doing. They're clicking and you're no longer in their panel. So that is, you need to find your people because otherwise you've lost affirmation of your worth.
Yes. Yes. I agree. I know I dropped Medicare. Oh God. 3 years ago, almost 4 years ago. It was a great, great decision for me just in terms of my own mental health, the finances, all of it. And I came across the same thing. I was like the person everybody referred to. And then I dropped the insurance and even the primary cares that were like, well, wait, so where do we send them? I'm like, no, you can still send them to me. We have a discounted price for our Medicare patients. Like we're really trying to make this work.
Right.
And I will say it took a while. We did start getting some referrals back, but like, that tanked. Like that tanked because it's almost too, I feel like when you're in the entrepreneurship space versus being a W-2 employee, and there's nothing wrong with either, right? Both come with their good and their bad. But it's very difficult, you know, as a W-2 employee, I think sometimes to understand working outside of that system that you're used to being in, those guardrails. And I have this conversation with my husband all the time because he's a W-2 employee for the longest time. And he'd be like, I do not understand how your world works. And it's like, no, I know. Like, you know, it's up in the air a lot, and I have to move with things, and I have to pivot all the time. And that's part of the joy actually of entrepreneurship. But it is difficult, I feel like, for some other physicians who are working within a system to know that like this is an option and they can refer out. So I think that's probably most people's experience when they, even when they just drop an insurance, even if they don't go full direct care, you know?
And it's the financial ramifications of that to your practice, but it's also, I think for me, it was a huge emotional blow that I wasn't ready for. So I love Rochester. I've lived here 23 years. I went to med school here, trained in Atlanta, and then came back to Rochester. I thought it was just, you know, I'm not from here, but I thought it was a great place to raise kids and have a family and a wonderful medical community. I mean, the University of Rochester is a great medical center. But having said that, it is also a very conservative community in terms of going off the brick path.
Right.
Very few direct pay doctors within primary care. Less than, I think I'm one of like three or four specialty that are, and the others are pain management and psychiatry. So there's no market for what I do. And then you throw dementia prevention into that.
Right.
And then,
super specialized.
So like, let's make it really, really hard. But because it's not a very sexy topic, but it is,
but it is a topic that needs to be had. Yes.
Interesting and useful. But I think that just not having affirmation from my colleagues that what you're doing is important and what you're doing is worthwhile, that was what I really missed and still miss in Rochester. I still don't, you know, I don't have that in Rochester. So finding my community has been what I've needed to do. And so that's been mostly online through Facebook groups. And then, you know, at the Entree MD podcast, I think listening to Dr. Una's podcast has changed my life just in terms of like, I'm not alone in this journey. And then other podcasts like yours, I just think are, the value of what you're doing is tremendous in just telling docs there's another world out there.
I think broadening out your horizon in terms of where you get that support from is such a cool way to do it. Yeah. I love the online groups for sure. What about something else I wanted to ask you about was time management, very specifically as a solopreneur, because that's like, I feel like everybody struggles. So tell me about how you deal with that.
So, you know, you go to med school and you're told what to do. You go to residency and you're told what time to show up and, you know, you leave when the work is done. And then I had a private practice and a wonderful clinic manager who's filled my day every day. And I never had I never had enough time,
right?
But somebody's planned it for me. And then boom, you have like this, you're not, you know, especially if you're just starting, you don't have a full clinic schedule. And then you have these huge voids and huge list of things to do, but how do you do it? So, time management and realizing that I probably check off all these ADHD boxes.
Oh, don't we all? I know.
has been really eye opening.
Yes.
And so I'm learning, and it's a continuous process, but learning to use tools beyond like copious lists, because those just grow, but you know, time blocking, batching things, and prioritizing, you know, the 80-20 rule in terms of prioritizing what's important, and really prioritizing in a sense growing the business from a marketing and branding standpoint. Because if the business doesn't succeed, then your mission doesn't succeed. And, you know, so much now rides on my mission because I have social affirmation. So it's, you know, there's some ego in there, but there's also just, it's just pure fun. Like you want to make it like, we got into medicine because we're gunners, you know? Even the meek amongst us are that way. So, you know, we're high achievers. So we want this to work.
Absolutely.
So time management of that 80-20 is key. And so like what I've done is like, I just block out times in my schedule that are, this is my, you know, social media day or morning. This is my CEO time. Time management is key, and adding, making sure that your sleep and your exercise are in there, because otherwise, like I said, you're just in this nebulous world, and in the next day, you're like, what did I do yesterday?
And it's, you know, the nice part too about private practice, I feel like, is you do get so much more control over your time. And I think that's something that we kind of take it, you know, take for granted occasionally, but like, you know, reflecting back on it, I just changed my Monday schedules because I was like, I'm going to work out 5 days a week, not
it
four,
really is.
You know?
Yeah.
So like, now I start later on Mondays because that's important to me. And that is something that I need to be doing for myself. So I mean, I love the idea of blocking time. It's, I feel like, did you ever read The 12-Week Year?
No, I haven't.
Oh, that is such a great one. Because it's like,
okay,
it's so much about like putting together your schedule so that you can achieve so much more within just a short like quarter. So you're basically looking at it as
you're having a quarterly.
Yes.
I have been doing.
It's just, this will probably be all stuff you're already doing, but totally worth it. Well, okay. Speaking of books, I always want to find out what everybody actually is reading and what has been really transformational. So are there a book or two that you particularly love?
So what I actually turned to was the, I think the Harvard Business Review Entrepreneur's Handbook.
Oh, yes.
Okay. And it's like so not me because I'm anything but Harvard Business Review. But there was like a checklist of, are you an entrepreneur?
Oh, I love that.
And I was like, damn straight I am.
Yeah, I am.
Because I, you know, the checklist worked for me. Like they, and then how to build a business plan and how to, I had done the balance sheet and the profit and loss in my previous practice, but just figuring out the numbers, like what's the math to make this work?
Yep.
And it was, so that was really just nuts and bolts, useful for me. And I don't think I read it from front to back because, you know, it got too dense in the Harvard Business Review kind of thing. But at least like the first four chapters, I think, were useful for me.
Yeah.
And then I discovered the Entree MD podcast and that life-changing, where have you been all my life moment.
Mm-hmm.
And any of her books. So, you know, I think her, there's a...
She's got like a profitable...
Yes, that the private,
yeah,
profitable
yeah,
private practice.
Yeah.
So that
it's a
was
quick read too. It's a good
it's
one.
It's a
yeah.
really quick read. And then I think she has one on mindset as well.
Yeah,
I
the mindset stuff's the big thing.
Mm-hmm. The mindset stuff is, I think, the most important thing. And if I could tell somebody, aside from books to read, things to do when you're even just thinking about it, if you're thinking about a direct pay practice, you're going to have to make this marketable and you are the product. And if you want to be the product, you need to have a brand. And if you want to create your brand, get out there.
Yeah.
And that means social media. I never even had an Instagram. I posted some pictures of my daughter and I traveling in New Zealand. That was it. That was my extended Instagram.
Yeah.
So you have to do the uncomfortable things like that. So just create your brand before you take the leap is what I wish I had done.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I will say, like, every mastermind group I've ever been in, because I did Entre MD for a little bit, I've had a couple other mastermind groups that I was in.
Right.
There is such a cool sense of community when you're doing those. But I think the thing that it really helped me with the most, being, you know, part of any of that, was the mindset part, right?
The
Knowing
mindset.
That, like, okay, this is something you can do. This is, other people are doing it. It's like you get that social proof from other people that are doing it.
And that's exactly
And, you know, and it turned out everybody's a little bit different. And as it turned out, like, I've done better I've made more movement forward with my businesses with a personal individual coach.
And I think that's
And
absolutely right.
yeah,
For
and that just, you know,
people,
and everybody's a little bit different. And so I think, you know, definitely starting to listen to, you know, some podcasts is a good place to start, just so that you can, you know, kind of get a sense of what you feel might be a good direction for you. And then I think, you know, being self-aware enough to know, like, how do I do best? Like, if I'm in a huge group of people, am I going to show up the way I would if I have to be, like, individually accountable? I won't, but, like, other people do,
no,
you know?
And the accountability part with an individual coach, I think, is huge.
Oh, yeah.
I actually think that is really, because like I said, you're off the road, right?
Yeah.
You're not on the path anymore. You're taking your own. So that is really, I do think working with an individual coach would be really helpful in that regard. Plus, the time management and all those skills that some people might do better than me, you know, so that they can customize those for you.
Yeah. I feel like half the time the accountability for me with my clients is like, no. Remember, you're doing great. We need to stop speeding ahead and take the time to give ourselves credit, you know, because that's probably the biggest thing most of us do is we just plow ahead. We're like, okay, solve that problem, on to the next. And there's not enough time to appreciate, like, no, I did all of these things. Like, that's what my coach does for me. She's like, okay, can we stop for a second? So it's
and
important
so
to have.
Reflect on what you've done. And,
Yes. And how to move forward and the skills you've gained. So wonderful. All right. Well, thank you so much. I am so glad we got to talk. And I appreciate you sharing everything, because, like, it's such a cool thing to hear somebody really have seen what a lot of us suspected medicine was like, to move into the, okay, it's not just me. There is a problem with the greater system. And then
there's
making
a
change. Like, doing what's best for you. And I love that you use a mission statement. I would encourage everybody to do it, because it just gives you something to reflect back on when you're starting to lose your why, you know? So this was a wonderful conversation. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you,
and
Sarah.
Yeah, where can everybody find you?
You can find me on www.healthspanneurology.com. So the name of the practice is Healthspan Neurology.
Love that.
And you can find me on social media at dr.gajavira, G-A-J-A-W-E-E-R-A. So
Perfect.
Dr. Gajavira.
Wonderful. Yeah. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. I had fun.
Bye.
Bye-bye.